seriously, this time and this time alone, when I use the phrase ladies, I am not referring to myself, actually.
I think that that is a perfect way to start the Game of Bones podcast this week. Although Michael is in the background, what's he doing right now? What are you doing, Michael? We'll find out more about that later as the show progresses.
I'm already intrigued.
This is episode 13. Lucky 13.
Yes. Or unlucky 13. Gosh, hope nobody dies.
That is completely morbid. Jesus.
We just jinxes all. I hope we make it through now.
We've been on Skype, except for a good portion of that. The call has been on hold because we were doing a little bit of last minute homework before we start talking to you guys.
And what a great bit of homework
it was a great bit of homework. Sorry, I'm not very versed on segues, although I would be apt to go ahead and ride one rather than walking around busy city streets if they didn't look so dorky.
Have you never taken a Segway tour in Chicago?
No, I've never taken a Segway tour.
Me neither. Okay, LeakyCon. All right, they have in August when you guys are all here, we're gonna do one of those Segway tours of Chicago.
What is there to tour? This is a building people work in.
The Lakeshore.
This is a building people work in.
It's not like St. Louis. The architecture in Chicago.
This is a building people eat in, and people shop here. Welcome
to Chicago. And now we all look like dorks. Hey, never underestimate the power of dorks in small packs.
Well, Eric, do you wear a fanny pack when you take the Segway tour? Serious question.
No,
what about a fishnet shirt? Do you wear one of those when you take the Segway tour?
Well, I don't know, because now that I have one, I might want to, get it out. No, of
Air
course not.
Nipples.
That would be, you know why? That would be, you know what, guys? That would be a terrible tan. Can you imagine that tan?
Oh,
that
I can. I can imagine the damage you would cause to people with your razor sharp nipples in your direct vicinity.
The tan lines would be terrible.
So we'll link up a photograph of that in the show notes for all you ladies that listen to the show. You know, Game of Thrones offers you guys a lot of girl exposure and at times man exposure. There's attractive guys in the show, right, Selena? There's a few.
A few.
Well, if there's ever been a lack of attractive men on the program for you guys, you now
have
a picture in the show notes to make up for it.
So. Yeah, should we explain that photo at all?
I don't think so. I think out of context is better.
Eric was auditioning for Game of Thrones, you know.
No, he was auditioning for a mashup of Game of Thrones and Hunger Games in one show.
Hunger
Thrones. It's new fan fiction written by the author of 50 Shades of Grey. And
we can call this story Game of Games.
Exactly.
I was wondering how long it would be till that book made its way, like got a mention on one of the podcasts I do, and now I know.
No, Selena and I were actually texting about that, funny enough, that damn book. Eventually, I feel like Selena's going to read it and eventually start a podcast for it, probably.
Video podcast?
50 Shades of Grey, of course. Yeah, I mean, no, you were talking about Hunger Games still. Yeah, I feel like, you know, I've been resisting it so far, but I think it's inevitable.
Yeah,
it's gonna happen, you guys.
We're all gonna fall prey to its allure eventually, in the paperback form at least. Well, I'm trying to figure out how we move on from this discussion, but what we were just watching and sort of gathering our thoughts on.
Yeah, speaking of sexy men.
Yeah, sexy men. Are we going to talk about the sailor captain himself, Suspenders?
That's the one I was talking about.
The man, George R.R. Martin.
I can't think of anyone sexier.
Does anyone know what the R.R. stands for?
Robert
Redford.
Wine.
George Robert Redford Martin.
That's a beautiful name. It's got a ring to it.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. No, that'd be three. Mars.
Yes.
Oh, right. Yeah. Rudolph Red-Nosed.
That's like an Albus Dumbledore sort of name. Like you have just lots of superfluous middle names, but
yeah,
maybe it's
works.
Not really
Wolfric Brian. Yeah.
Maybe it's not really RR. Maybe it's like RR.
Well, that would explain his affinity for pirates. Yes.
I use this this tool called Google. I don't know if you've heard of it.
No, not
Google.
Yet.
Google, aren't you fancy?
Isn't it Goggle?
Well, sometimes depending.
Can
on
you
how
goggle
drunk
somebody?
You are. Yeah. Yeah. Raymond Richard.
Oh.
Ooh.
Raymond we were Richard? Close. They both started with an R, so we were pretty close. Do you guys still use Ask Jeeves for your searching privileges? Because I know that, you know, just looking at the analytics of Game of Thrones and through the podcast.
You can
through
be
iTunes,
a feisty fellow, though, sometimes.
We get a lot of our clicks and views and listens from Ask Jeeves referring.
Really?
So,
that says a lot about our listeners.
No, that's an example of a site that hasn't really ever had to advertise since the first, you know, 6 months that it opened. People still kind of flock back to Jeeves the butler, who's going to not answer the question that you want him to answer.
It doesn't exist anymore, not exactly
as you would hope.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't exist anymore. Ask.com is like the mature version of Ask Jeeves. Anyway, the Sword and Laser program did we were talking about it before we started recording, and they did a very, I haven't seen every interview that's ever existed, but it felt like such a casual, laid back interview. And Micah was just going on about how comfortable George looked.
Yeah.
And not only that, but I think he was on point the whole time. He just said tons of stuff that was just so interesting. I was glued to the screen watching him.
Is that why you put us on hold?
Yeah.
Okay.
Leave me alone. No, it's okay. I'm absorbing.
No, it's okay. I was sad.
The reason why I brought that up, though, is that that's kind of how you want somebody like that to be interviewed, though. You want them to be relaxed. You want them to kind of just have a free-flowing conversation, kind of like what we do every week. You don't want it to be so official and regulated and have, like, these questions that you know that he's been asked a million times before. Like, even the way that they opened up the interview, they said, we're not going to ask about who his favorite character is, or, you know, questions that you would expect that the regular news folk would ask, you know?
Right.
And that's what I think made for such a great interview here.
Yeah, no, when I saw it, because we posted on the site, I'm actually buds with Tom, who's the guy on that show. And it's funny to see other people that are in your life that you necessarily haven't talked about Thrones with be so energetic and passionate about it. Like, you don't have to have that relationship always happening. It's funny to me how many people are so interested. Like, for example, he on the show referred to the Hound as Sandor. You know what I mean? Like, that's some extreme shit. I've never done that. So, you know what I mean? So that's cool. So props to them for putting together such like an awesome interview, because like Micah was saying, he was just laying back and just riffing about his entire process of creating these characters and so many other things. And I feel like it was the most intimate look we've been able to have like for a long time at the entire story.
What I loved most were the suspenders.
Yeah, you know, they were strategically.
I like the earbuds,
but you know,
actually.
You know what the thing though about the suspenders is that not only were they extremely fashionable and eye-catching, but I'm sitting here thinking if it wasn't some kind of secret clue, because if you look at them, it's fire made of ice.
Oh. I get it. Mm-hmm. Selena, if I add suspenders to my fishnet shirt, will you like me?
It'll cover your nipples.
Yes.
So is that what it's going to...
That's what it is.
Oh god, I love that photo because it's got like a background from an elementary school, like headshots for the yearbook.
Yeah, somebody else. I had no choice of the background. Otherwise, I probably would have chosen like an arena or something.
You didn't bring your own background?
I actually did not bring my own background.
Oh, okay.
The truck broke down on I-90. I had to walk the rest of the way to Weston.
Okay.
For the Hunger Games con that I went to, which is what that was for, by the way.
It's at 6:15. The actual interview within the episode, and we posted about it on Goo, so it's on there, and it'll also be in the show notes. So yar. For me personally, there was a few things that I took away from it that stood out above some of the rest. But I guess if we go chronologically, they asked him a few things, and then he started sort of going off on his own without being led too much. But
essentially, he's talking about his creative process, and Sword and Laser asked him if he. You know, writes characters based on their destiny or lets them grow kind of organically within him. And he said it's a bit of both. And just basically that, you know, he's had plans for characters and sometimes they'll kind of feel around, go their own way a little bit when he's writing a scene with them in an unexpected territory, but that also could be a problem, and that sometimes characters go to a place that's not, you know, for the betterment of the story. So to keep in mind, you know, the plot threads and stuff. And, you know, here's a man who writes these 1,000-page stories, you know, that have all these different plot threads dangling at any time. And it's just so fascinating to hear him talk about how much of the novels are structure and how, like, pre-planned kind of character arc, this person's going to end up here, versus... you know, certain lines and things that came out of nowhere.
See, I posted about this and another interview on Hypable recently where he said pretty much the same thing, that he basically, a lot of the time, it's not that he doesn't know where he's going as much as he doesn't know where how he's going to get there. And I don't know, does that worry anyone else? You know, just from an enjoying the story
standpoint? I was reassured by this because he starts it out by saying he knows where all the characters are going to end up to the from the beginning to the end.
Well, the major characters.
Yeah. Oh, right. Major character. Okay, so... Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that other interview said that he was like more of a feeler, like more of a how they're going to get there. Because that would sound worrying, actually, now that you mentioned that. But
that's interesting, though, Selena, because I think a lot of people could make the argument with parts of Feast for Crows and Dance with Dragons that what he said is pretty accurate. Because I know a lot of people felt as if they didn't quite know where they were going with in the story.
There's a lot of just walking around. You know, in this story.
Exactly.
Like, it's true.
And it's not all Daenerys either.
Yeah. I don't want to compare any of the stuff that I do to the scale of the awesomeness that he's creating. But for my work, it's entirely creative based. Like, it's very, very creative heavy. And so when you're writing stories, essentially, there is a sort of a moment when you're diving into it where you know what you want and you sort of know what the end product is. So let's say we have the beginning, we have the end, essentially. There's kind of a romance inside of it if you allow yourself to be sort of taken by the principles of the story. And what he's doing, it seems like, kind of what I was reading between the lines and what he was saying, but he's taking these bullet points that make up these characters, these different personality traits, these different situational ironies that they push out, and he's allowing those principles to steer conversations that he has had the idea of creating, but not necessarily planned every line. So he's sort of naturally allowing the story to unfold. And on one hand, that's kind of scary because it's like, well, maybe you don't really know the story that well, even though it's your story. But on the other hand, it's like, well, he knows the characters and he's letting the characters tell the story.
Yeah, he says sometimes they'll, and I'm just paraphrasing here, but he does say that, you know, sometimes they'll come up with, or they'll speak, you know, when he lets them speak, instead of writing their lines for them, when he, quote, lets them speak, they'll come up with a line that he never could have envisioned, just kind of trying to lay down the rules and set down, you know, what this person would have said. And so I think that's gold. There's always this X factor that appears. I think even going back through, you know, classic movies, classic books, I'm sure some of those things would be the same way. I mean, ad-libs in movies like Han Solo, you know, when Leia says, I love you, and he says, I know. You know, yeah. Harrison Ford wrote that line, but it makes the character. I mean, that's the apex of that character. And, you know, right there, and it was
That in New Hope, when he runs with the blaster through the hallway, is the apex of his character. Well, yelling.
If the apex can be nonverbal, then yeah. But I guess you're right.
Knowing this, and that being said, and I'm kind of posing this question to Micah and Selena, who have read all the books. Do you guys feel like particularly you can kind of envision a moment or a piece of a story that he's sort of allowed to go off on its own and to be completely character based versus story driven? Like for me, I'm envisioning maybe he's allowed Jaime and Bran to get really dialogue heavy and to be funny, you know?
I mean, it's hard because you can't really get inside his mind, can you, to know what was sort of tangential and what was meant to be the story from the beginning. Only he really knows that, but right. I think he's done something very unique, and I know other authors have done it as well, but to have those viewpoint characters where that's the only perspective that you're getting, I mean, that's what makes it, it must make it so difficult to write, because you're not just sort of sitting back and watching the whole thing go by. You know, you're getting each of these individual perspectives of what's happening, and he touched on that a little bit as well when they got into the discussion about the TV series, and I'm sure we'll get to that later, but I'm trying to think of one or two specific moments that kind of jump out where you feel as a reader that he's kind of gone in that direction, but I can't really think of one right now.
For me, when I read the books, I absolutely love the books and I love the detail, but I do feel like throughout this whole series, there are characters that just sort of go off and do things that mean nothing. And that doesn't mean that it means something in terms of their character, but overall, I think he George R. R. Martin takes great care to not tell a story, but to tell something that could have been real, which is, you know, the realities of life is that sometimes you do something that ends up meaning nothing as right. sad as that is. And that does happen in the book. And I think some of the characters that I kind of feel like have gone on these journeys that so far at least haven't paid off would be Sam and maybe even Arya, although obviously not saying obviously which books this I'm talking about here, but I feel like their stories sort of have gone in a lot of different directions and it's sort of been a bit schizophrenic, but that doesn't mean that they aren't going somewhere very specific for the story. I'm just hoping that there's a payoff. But I'm also looking at the whole picture going, maybe they're just all going to die.
I think of it as like in the film industry when an editor says, you know, the best editing job is one you don't notice. You know, an editor's work is best if you don't notice somebody's actually editing, things flow, things, you know. So talking about George R. R. Martin as the author, you shouldn't really be able to tell what characters say, whether it was because of their overall arc or because they willed it to be so through him. You know, you shouldn't be able to tell. You shouldn't just find all the dead space and say, hey, that's the character doing their own thing versus this is what has, you know, been planned. I think it's probably got to be a huge mix. Every single word is probably a mixture of, mm-hmm. you know, or every sentence is probably a mixture of that those forces at play.
Yeah. To respond to you, Selena, though, I think part of why we might feel as readers that these people are going off in these directions and we feel kind of empty right now is because we don't know the entire story and we don't know yeah. the reasoning behind why Arya goes here or why Tyrion goes there. It's just kind of all up in the air. You can even kind of relate it to the Potter series when you're going through and you're thinking to yourself, well, why is this relevant?
But then why you go are they back still in. Camping?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I don't know about
so they
that.
Can have a sweet dancing scene, okay?
Come on. But, you know, something else I related to the Potter series was when he was talking about how people tend to really obsess over minor characters or develop these types of affinities for characters that he never even anticipated when writing them. And I thought that, you know, you probably get a lot of that no matter what series you're talking about. But since Potter is one that we're all kind of familiar with, be interesting to see, like, can we think of any characters in that series where you say to yourself, why is somebody particularly obsessed with this character?
Were there really minor characters that people... Okay, Bellatrix. And I think what comes with that, I would say, I would have to say Lucius is...
I'm thinking of Lucius and Draco cosplayers at Harry Potter conventions particularly.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I know which ones, but...
I know.
Okay, so I see that's what you guys mean by minor characters. I don't know, I just feel like they have a lot more to them than something that George R. R. Martin's example was the man with the cloak of raven, you know, feathers, who right. possibly has three lines. When you're looking at so many thousands
Titus
of pages,
Blackwood.
Yeah, when you're looking at so many thousands of pages, he's obviously more minor than Bellatrix Lestrange, who right. is the closest thing the Dark Lord ever had to a, you know, a partner.
Well, so. when it comes to comparing minor characters to those two stories, we've got, like Eric said, a whole lot more pages to compare it to. So a minor character in Potter still has something. Like, I could think of like a Daedalus Diggle or something like that. You know, yeah. a minor mention that has a few. And that's just like a payoff for people that pay attention to details that she's sort of rewarding you with. Like, hey, if you paid attention to book one to who was shooting the stars, it's more cool when this was mentioned later. So he's probably peppering around in the books sort of things to call back on. But what he was saying was, well, like this in particular, there's no callback. I just thought that was interesting. So he's got all of these moments that are random sort of, but in his opinion, and probably so, I think so, it's giving at the end of the day more richness to the story.
Yeah.
I love that what he said was that the characters that seem to evoke, or the characters that everybody likes, you know, were kind of the least developed, so people could imprint their own, you know, thoughts onto them and make them into the character they like, whereas the really specific characters that he's taken time to develop, you know, aren't the favorites necessarily. because people's personalities clash.
I was really surprised that he mentioned Jaime Lannister as a character that we shouldn't like, because I feel like he's done so much to make him really likable in the story.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but has he done something to make him actively likable, or has he just let Jaime become the person that he is?
I think he has.
Well,
I think he definitely, like, Jaime has gone on such an incredible journey. Like, you're really encouraged, I think, to sympathize with him. What do you think, Micah?
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, listeners need to remember where this interview is taking place, you know, in terms of George R. R. Martin is referring to the books, I think, more so than he's referring to the TV series when he's talking about these characters. Though, I wonder a bit at the same time, because he brought up Bronn as sort of one of those minor characters, and yeah. I wonder if he's seeing more reaction to Bronn now, not because of the book, obviously, but because
of the actor.
Right.
The actor had such a badass role in season two.
When he talked about that in the interview, I thought that was a great answer to sort of what we've been saying all season so far in this podcast, where it was really nice to hear him sort of say, like, I understand that the showrunners can't paint my entire story. They have limited budget. They have limited time. So it's interesting, and he likes it that you get to see this sort of additional content from people that aren't point of view characters, like that he regrettably can't, with the way he's fashioned his story, that he can't dive into. So when we got to see that scene at Littlefinger's brothel between the Hound and between Bronn, that was something that is really special to us and to people that watch the show and who are also fans of the books, because that's sort of just like DLC for them, like additional content. Like they're soaking up extra stuff. It's like Pottermore, but better, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's cool. Right. Well, and I'm glad that that's the case. And I'm glad that people have sort of, toward the end of the season, have gotten a little less, like, brash about stuff being different and maybe stuff being added. He talked a lot about the Boba Fett syndrome with people like Bronn, whereas, like, Boba Fett's got a sweet jetpack and a badass laser on his wrist. So, like, there's something to like. So, Bronn has, like, sweet bow skills, and he just has the swagger, you know, that could probably match Tyrion's. So, like, we like him, but you don't get to see that in the books. So, yeah. I Micah, though, I really do think that it's only because of the show. And I haven't read all of the books, and we'll get to a lot of that later.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that it's definitely because of the show. Whereas, I think when he was talking about the reactions of women in particular, when he mentioned Jaime Lannister...
I resent that.
And Theon Greyjoy. Which
he said Theon. No, he said the ladies really dig Theon. And then they were like, oh, okay, I wouldn't call it attraction. And he's like, no, some women are writing me letters and they really dig these characters.
You know, I see the correlation here between women and their interest in Theon Greyjoy. Do you guys see that too?
Is it Eric again?
Yeah.
I don't... What is this joke that we've created?
I didn't create it. George R. R. Martin created it. He listens to the show.
It's just funny that he says women, and you are literally the only person that we know who likes Theon. I don't know any women who like Theon.
So you don't. Well, okay, I guess women
and Sweden are really different, though. Honestly,
that might be what it is. Yeah, we scoff at the Theons of the world.
American girls love the bad boys,
but he's not even a bad boy.
I know. Well, American girls sometimes have skewed opinions on what a bad boy is too.
What did you guys think of the comment when he said, "If you created a character and everyone likes them, you've created a piece of cardboard"?
It's true.
That was awesome.
I don't know. Everybody likes Tyrion.
Yeah, but Tyrion, there's a lot of negative things to his personality as well. But not on top of all of that, he's an imp. Which we don't, like, we're not mad about that.
Or as what's her face, who plays Cersei, would say, a pee to the imp, a pimp.
Yes.
Which was hilarious.
Yeah, that was nice. What? Lena Headey was quoted saying that.
She's so funny. She's like my new idol now.
It's true, though. Like, think of someone like, you know, I'm going to throw out some analogies here so maybe the audience can wrap their mind around it a little easier, but someone like Severus Snape, who was so unlikable, but even in the first book, we find out that he was giving, like, an anti-enchantment to what Quirrell was doing to Harry's broomstick. Sorry if that's a spoiler to people who haven't read Sorcerer's.
You spoiled
it's been out for 15 years today, yeah. But it's cool, and I think that's so true. It's not interesting if the person is not real, because everyone in the world has layers. We're like onions or cake, depending on which Shrek character you're lining yourself.
I was going to say.
And in the morning, if you eat waffles or if you ingest helpings of Clif Bars like I do, like it shapes who you are as a person. And you can either go toward the dark side or the light side. Or you can be like Anakin and have your try in both.
Which side has cookies?
I would probably say the dark side has cookies, most likely. People's reactions to real people, this is what he said, are much more complex and much more layered and contradictory at times. It's true. People like realness, and that's what he's writing.
Resonated with me to hear him say all of these quotes from this interview that we pulled and that I thought were fascinating. Resonated because, you know, as an aspiring writer, or I want to try to write fiction, you know, more, you know, in depth. And these are all tips. These are all like, you know, Uncle George, Uncle Martin, you know, Uncle RR is really giving you some sound advice. He's saying things like, watch out where your characters take you. It can be great, but it can also be bad. And, you know, if you create a character that everyone likes, be careful. They're probably cardboard. Like, you know, all of these kind of, cautionary, you know, statements. I feel like I'm being taught.
A guidebook, like George R. R. Martin's guide to
Uncle Ray to teaches writing.
But yeah, I just feel like he's teaching. I feel like I'm not being isolated by his great intelligence. I'm being enveloped by it. So I'm going to seek out, having seen this interview now, I'm going to seek out other interviews and hope that they're half as good.
It was a special interview, really. I especially like the most for the people that are big fans of the show and maybe had questions toward Blackwater when Uncle Ray started talking about the money issues. And he said he brought up that he's like, I wrote Blackwater. I thought that episode was awesome. And obviously, but he started to talk about, he was like, well, there's money issues. Like at the end of the day, it is an HBO show and it is massively successful and it does have a large budget. But he's like, I wanted horses, but they cost way too much. You know, it's easier to get one horse to defecate in a throne room. It's less easy to get 30 horses to do like a wide shot, you know, with like spears and shit.
Yeah. And the other piece that they left out that he talked about too was the trebuchets, which would have been awesome to see. Because didn't they actually in the book put people in them? Or am I making that up?
You're thinking of Robin Hood. Or you're probably thinking of the book. I haven't read it yet. That's one of my favorite scenes. Kevin Costner flying over the battlements into a stack of hay. Go watch the movie, people. Sorry if that's dated. That dates me.
Yeah, because didn't Tyrion call them like the three whores or something like that? All right. Never mind.
It's something like that.
But he also talked a lot about the different things that he's working on. And there was that song that sort of went, not really viral, but it became popular in the sort of the fansite community. Paul and Storm did that song about Right Like the Wind, George R. R. Martin. And basically the whole idea about that is, hey man, we realize that you're wanting to write and revisit a lot of other stuff because like he's working on The Thousand Worlds, he's working on the Wild Card series, and he's got these massive universes, and like the Wild Card one is longer than, he said it's been going for like 30 years or something, which is longer than Thrones. And like, do you guys feel like with this sort of general attitude he has toward the characters, sort of kind of like a careless attitude towards the characters, do you think that he may, you know, be like, well, I'm doing this right now, like after the next book, and take a break and make the, you know, because he's had like 6 years between books before.
Probably.
No.
I know. You don't think that he will?
No. And I mean, my reasoning behind it is, number one, he's got an HBO series that's right now catching up to him. You know, with each passing year that he doesn't put out a book, the HBO series is getting closer and closer from a time frame standpoint.
They split every season from now on. He's still got a good like 10 years.
That's true.
Yeah,
the other side of it though is that he has a completely new audience now that he's brought on. I mean, his readership has to have grown by the thousands, if not hundreds of thousands.
Millions, I'm sure.
Millions,
let's be honest.
Even.
Yeah.
This show. I mean, this show has kind of, you know, done for him probably what he could never have imagined, you know, a couple of years ago. And so having that base of people out there, he has to cater to those people whether he really likes it or not. And that's why I think he's just going to continue writing and he's going to finish. He said it's going to take him years to finish Ice and Fire. And when he said that, it made it seem like the other things were not going to get the attention that they need, you know, and he was going to, he said he would even be in a different place, you know, let's say 4 or 5 years from now.
Once it's finished.
Once Ice and Fire is finished. So who knows if he's going to feel like going back to those other things. But of course he can take a break. I mean, I'm not saying that, that's impossible, but I feel like there might be a little bit of added pressure now, whereas before that didn't exist.
I feel like he's got the swagger to just disregard all of the hype and say, well, I'm doing something else now. I mean, it's clear that he's that he is that confident of a person, which is admirable for sure. But on the other hand, it's like, well, there are a lot of, you know, lonely kids out there that would love to finish this, these books.
Yeah. I mean, just based on what he said about not having enough time to go back to the other series, I think he will continue on or is continuing on with Ice and Fire, at least for the time being. The way he talked about it, you know, he said that he really would kind of like to get back to some. He said, some days I'd like to, you know, revisit Thousand Worlds. Some days I'd like to do this, that. But he said, I don't have the time at the moment because of Ice and Fire. So, you know, it's clear that his priority is Ice and Fire at the moment, at least at the moment. But it's just so fascinating to hear from the author that they don't have enough time. You know, we might say, oh, you know, we have our list of things we want to do, you know, if we have free time. And then I'm like, oh, I have such a list. You know, his list is like, it's the same. It's the same with him where he's like, got, he's always writing and it's he still has these things that he'd like to do that he just doesn't have time to do. So that was really cool.
I mean, look, at the end of the day, he's going to do whatever he wants to do. So
that's what I mean, yeah.
I mean, he could be a hermit. He could here. He could go, you know, into hermit mode and write his other stuff or not write at all.
I think the timing between, you know, books is going to obviously be shorter than it was previously. I think that's a definite.
Yes.
Yeah, I think everyone from the publisher to the fans is going to probably demand that. I think you're right.
I don't think it's a bad thing. I know what it's like firsthand to have the fire thrown under you. And then, you know, when you're under pressure, you can usually spit out.
Pretty hot, right?
Yeah, it gets so warm. And it's like, what else are you going to do? You got to get out of there. So take care of business. You know what I'm saying? But no, that's good. And I'm excited. And I want to see where it goes, obviously. And we've got sort of, I don't want to say a long future, because in the grand scheme of things, it's not a long future of discovery. But we all need to sort of, and I say we as in us and in all of you guys listening and all of your friends who haven't listened yet, that you're just waiting patiently for the right time to introduce them to the show. We all need to appreciate the sort of the place that we're in, because, you know, we could keep going back to Potter because that was the most recent large literary critical success. And I'm not going to include Twilight, but, it's a special thing to be a part of the process and to be a part of this, the discovery before we know everything, before everything's out. You know, we're only past the second season of the television show. I mean, we've got so much more, but when it's gone, it's gone. So, you know, everybody should catch these interviews if they're interested, listen to the podcasts if they're interested, because eventually it'll all be over.
Oh, that's depressing.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Well, speaking of things eventually being over, we met on Sunday night and we sort of finalized a lot of our plans for the rest of the show, and we thought that we would take some time this episode and allow this to sort of be, what did we call it? You guys said it was really eloquent, or no, Eric, you said it was poetic. I forget what we said.
Selena,
what I said
and
about
I kind of worked. Selena wasn't even on that call, and she worked it out that it was poetic what you said. And I was just guessing. I don't know. We described it as the sharp intake of breath before a fall.
Let's say inhalation, the sharp inhalation of breath.
The sharp inhalation of breath before a jump. Actually, let's just say a jump, because what we were planning was some pretty deep stuff that's going to be exciting and fast-paced and intense and what's the word I'm really looking for when I spew out all these other ones I don't
baller
want?
Baller chill.
Baller chill.
Mind-blowing.
Wait, were those instructions? No. It's gonna be comprehensive. There we go.
We are obviously very passionate about Song of Ice and Fire. We're obviously very passionate about the television show and the literature and just everything that is involved in the universe. And something that's important to us is, well, specifically Eric and I, is taking the time and catching up and reading these books, because it's what everything is based on. So we sort of came together and we've been hashing the idea since, honestly, before we started the podcast. But what we're doing is organizing, I don't want to say a global reading, because this podcast probably isn't global yet, but let's just say
I think it's pretty global.
Okay, yeah, okay, global. You're global. Let's say it's like a massively multiplayer online reading.
Yeah,
something with the G, something experience. So someone throw down abbreviations for that. Conspiracy. But
basically, we're going to be reading the Song of Ice and Fire books. And this is at least part of what we plan to do in the off season between seasons 2 and 3 of the Game of Thrones television show, which has been our lifeblood or blood source or life source. Not sure which one of those are fantasy novels and which one's the actual word I'm looking for.
Sorcerer's
yeah,
Stone.
Source of life, life
blood.
Source. For
yeah.
Lifeblood, Elixir of life, for the first 12 episodes of this show, you know, where we've had these episodes each week to rely on, in the off season, we're looking at getting into the books. And obviously starting with the first book, each of these books, I don't know if you guys knew this, I certainly didn't know this, but each book has like 70 chapters. In it. It's broken into 70 different, you know, chunks of points of view from different characters of each of the stories. And basically, so we haven't figured out the pacing yet, but some of our future episodes that are recorded and released in this off season will feature review or discussion of, you know, certain chapters, certain parts of these books, in order.
So let's just say, for example, we're starting with the first book. Well, the easiest way for you guys to do this with us and for us to do it with each other, and for the people that haven't quite taken the plunge yet to start reading these books, that really, really want to and are sort of searching for that catalyst, they might not be actively searching, but if they have the desire to read, it's probably a passive thing that you guys are looking for. So what we're going to be doing is taking, for example, this is what we'll be doing next week, but from the prologue up until the 5th chapter, and these chapters are not traditional chapters in the traditional sense, not to be redundant, but they're point of view pieces from these different characters. So if it's a Cersei point of view, her second point of view may be the 10th chapter, but it's just called Cersei 2. So we're going to be going from 0 to 5, essentially, and taking different blocks of the book and exploring them with you each week, sort of like we have done with the television show. So right. With the way you've grown to love how the show is examined and joked about and had fun with, and at the end talking about the moments that owned, we're going to be doing the same exact thing with the book, except in staggered blocks. So it's more friendly for you guys to read along with us, and it's less daunting, because we can put in a chapter a night, right, guys? Something like that.
Yeah, I mean, something like that would work with my schedule, which I consider to be pretty busy, but I think that a chapter a night would be doable. Specifically because, again, I have a passion to read these books, just like you guys. I want to read the books that this show is based on, because right now I just know the show, and I know there's more hidden in these books. There's more to these books that will never make it on screen, and I want to know what that is. I feel left out every time I chat with Selena, or I hear Selena talk about these books, because she's read them and I haven't. And that needs to
get angry.
I'm sorry.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
And I think the most important thing that you touched on in what you said, though, is that we want their owns. You know, like, we've only had the opportunity to get owns from season 2 on TV. You know, we want owns coming right from the book now as we go through, because I'm sure there's a lot of good shit by Tyrion and other characters that we haven't had the opportunity to put out there yet.
Probably better shit, honestly.
Well, because it doesn't need to be condensed. You know, it can be this sprawling epic in novel form, as opposed to, you know, a TV show that's timed. I think the owns that we find in the books are going to be different owns, you know, completely different from what was in the series. And that's what makes it exciting. And what you guys really don't know is the whole reason we're doing this, by the way, is that Zach, before this show was created, I'm going to give you some little history behind this podcast. Before it was created, Zach was actually kidnapped and attacked by this monster that feeds on awesome moments and owns. And this whole time of this whole show, collecting owns from us and our listeners has really just been to appease this monster and keep Zach with us all.
It's true. It's true, guys. It's not something I like to talk about, but it's dangerous.
So now we need owns from your books because the monster is not appeased.
Oh man, now I'm just annoyed because I just realized that by rereading the books, we're gonna have to like read about Sansa's wolf dying again.
No,
that's like the worst. Because then you said monster. That's just the worst part for me.
Period.
Yeah, I'm not looking particularly forward.
Screw that.
Don't screw it. Gosh,
no. I meant the fact that we had to read about her at all. But it.
Oh. This is perfect. But
it came out the wrong way.
I like Sansa.
Yeah, that's what she said.
Double meaning there.
Yeah. It was bad enough watching the show when Cersei is asking Sansa about her blooming flower. Now we have to read about it in chapter form. But you know what? That comes later on.
Fragile.
I'm sure there will be good parts of these books and parts that are less desirable. But I'm up for the challenge if you guys are. And we got to keep that monster at bay. So we need more owns.
It's fun. It's good. It's a sequential way to sort of, you know, and we're all doing it together. So the discussions, you know, it's going to be basically sharing the story with a whole lot of friends. So it'll be through the forums. It'll be through the comments. It'll be through the tweets. It'll be through, most importantly, the show and Zach, what you guys are taking from it.
You have some other tricks up your sleeve, I believe.
Well, that may
perhaps
be the case. We have some very special ideas that we've put together for both season one and two, and we're really excited about doing it. And a lot of it can't be done until we're face-to-face with one another at our various trips across the globe this summer. Am I right, Eric Skoll?
You are right, Zach Louie.
So we got some fun stuff planned, and you know, it's good because we all get to have fun together, and you guys get to sort of share in that experience, and we all, at the end of the day, can talk about how awesome Hodor is, which is, let's face it, the most important part of this entire show.
Yeah, I think so. We should just rename it to Hodor Love.
I'm hoping that the last word in the entire series is not Scar, but I'm hoping that it's Hodor. Or Hodor says a brand new word. Like he says
Scar.
Like, no, the word that he says is like, damn.
No, he should say Scar. I think because the Harry Potter books didn't end in Scar, George R. R. Martin needs to tie that up. That loose end.
Sorry for everybody who hates Harry Potter.
The gauntlet has
listening.
Been passed.
So before we move on here and get to some listener emails, I wanted to ask you guys, you know, the NBA draft is coming up this week, and that kind of relates to what I do for work, but I was wondering if you could draft five characters, your top five characters from a Song of Ice and Fire series, who would it be? And a little explanation. You don't have to, you know, go too in-depth, but you know, who would be your top five? It could be for different reasons. It could be for strength. It could be for wit. You know, whatever you consider to be valuable in this kind of Game of Thrones arena.
Five characters. In order for me to answer this, Micah, you need to explain basketball to me. So
no, it has nothing to do with basketball.
Five people because I thought, aren't five people on the court at any time? There can't be more, right?
This is true.
Did yes. I? Okay, that's why yeah. I thought it was five.
Wait, hold on. So, you know, Micah, obviously, I could not be more excited about American NBA drafts, but what is the draft?
Well, Selena.
Well, they have the draft.
When a man and a woman love each other.
Yes.
They decide who would be the
to have a draft.
Best player on their sports team. And they choose those players from places like college and from tryouts and stuff like that. Right, Micah?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So who do you want on your team defending you? You said five characters?
This is the best question of all time.
This is brilliant.
This is
gold.
And I want to see your answers in the forums and on the tweets. And don't copy what Micah says because it's so cool. You know, like, let's get a little bit of creativity.
This requires us to think on our feet because there was no real, like, I didn't throw it in the dock or I didn't throw
we
it
We better
out
move
to
on then,
before.
Micah. I don't know if we can do this.
So wait, how is it different from our favorite five characters? Because they would have to work,
their strategy.
They'd have to work together on a team, right? Or to play basketball together. right?
Well, they don't necessarily have to play basketball. I mean, I don't think Tyrion would be the best choice.
No, listen, it's Micah, it's got to be about basketball or nothing.
Tyrion's going to get picked last for basketball.
He's like the Westerosian version of Muggsy Bogues.
Maybe. It's because he's rude, right? I was going to make that joke, you bastard. I'll just say Allen Iverson instead. He's short enough.
Shall we just do it?
I mean, because you wouldn't want to put mortal enemies on your fantasy team, right? Because they'd kill each other. It would be like hockey without the other team.
I got to talk about this on Edition. This is funny.
You don't have to tie it to basketball. It could just be like the five.
I love the basketball part. You know,
I'm doing basketball. Here we go. I'm doing basketball, Space Jam style. All right, Monstars, the sweetest arena.
Everybody, get up! It's time to jam now.
we'll fix divots. It'll be good. And this is what I choose. These are my people. First off, I'm going to have to go with Brienne of Tarth because she is tall and she'd be a great shooting guard or power forward. So I'm going to go.
This isn't the WNBA.
With Brienne. Hey, draft. Listen. Not only girls, she could kick your ass too. I'm going to have to go with probably. Ooh, this is hard. Let me think. Cersei is a cheerleader.
Oh, man.
Sansa as a cheerleader. Oh, no. You know, she'd be good at the game because she strikes me as the kind of person that would just have like Dirk Nowitzki like shooting skills. Like, so. So I'm going to go with Sansa on the team as well. Tyrion, once again, because he has the sprightly skills of a young Muggsy Bogues in his prime, who is also in Space Jam. Who else is there? Well, I'm going to have to go with Littlefinger, because he could probably trick the opposition pretty easily. Varys, so Brienne's not the only girl on the team. And
that's five.
Ned Stark, no, because they can use his head as a basketball. So that's who I choose.
Oh, man. That's great.
Oh, wow. Maybe we should move on to emails now.
Oh, no. I have some.
Okay. Please do it.
Yeah.
I was sitting here like desperately scribbling down, and I have alternates and everything, but I'll leave them off. I mean, I know that Zach already said this, but I mean, I gotta go with Brienne. Hell yeah. Yeah. She'll be team captain, and she's basically like all I really need. But then I figure Jamie, because they'll make an excellent team.
They'd be Bronn, like Shaq and Kobe.
They would be amazing. It yeah, was Micah. So then Bronn, because Bronn will just intimidate everyone else and be awesome.
He's got that long shot down too.
Gendry, because hello, my team is playing shirtless, by the way.
Skirts and skins, Brienne. Your skins.
No, Brienne's got to go.
Brienne's got to be shirtless. She's got bigger pecs than Gendry.
My final player is Ygritte, because I figure she can be pretty sly and sort of basketball stuff that I don't understand. I like basketball, but whatever. So that's my team.
She should be the coach because she knows so much is what she should do.
You know nothing, basketball people.
So guys, here's mine. I don't know if it's all that talk about Space Jam that got me really excited, but I kind of took a Space Cowboys approach to this draft team.
Like Tommy Lee Jones?
Just where they're older guys with a lot of skill. So the first guy I drafted onto my draft was Master Luwin, you know, who is no longer with us in the show, but I think he would be a team player. Also Sir Davos Seaworth, who's getting a little up there in the age, but totally kicks ass. Also Tywin Lannister. Did you guys really think he wasn't going to be on my list?
Well, I'm waiting for who else is going to show up.
I'm waiting for who's going to come, indefinitely.
And I'm going to say, okay, my fourth guy, Commander Mormont, right? Lord Commander. And the fifth one, this is going to blow your guys' minds. Okay. For my team. Duck sauce.
What?
Duck sauce, right. Because everybody knows that duck sauce will be good at basketball.
It's because his head's bald, right? Wow. Aerodynamic.
So I think Sir Daxus, or Daxus, what's his last name?
Zaro Zohan Daxos
is my fifth guy. So that's my team, mostly of older gentlemen, but that's whatever. It is what it is.
What about you,
Somewhere,
Micah?
Theon is crying. He just lost his only fan.
Oh, yeah, I guess I have to go too then, right?
Yes.
All right, well, I'll start, let's see, like, I'll go with the mountain and the hound.
All the people with the in their name.
This way.
They would tear each other apart, though.
No, we'd have to, I'd also add Melisandre to the team, so she could, like, do something to the two of them, and they won't fight each other.
But yeah, so she'd do something to the two
she
of them.
She just makes them look at fire before they start playing. Just look at the fire, guys. Yeah. Just look at it.
Yeah.
They're like,
so
okay.
That's three already. Wow.
It's not like you had time to think about this when you
I did,
were coming
I
up
thought
with
thought
it.
About it just before the show.
Oh, because like when we got on to record, you were like, I have the best idea ever, but I'm not
Hodor.
Going to write it in the doc.
How could nobody take Hodor?
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Oh, yeah.
Such
true.
A jock. Such a jock.
He is a jock.
And Jon Snow. He can hoop.
Yeah, you know he can hoop. He isn't all just hair, guys. All right,
swish.
There's more to him than hair.
Lots of swish.
I totally forgot that there should be like we could have put a, like Captain Creepy Face teleports. He can just dunk it easy, and he's bald
oh,
too,
man.
So you know
no,
he's good.
No, he'd be like the whole team. You
That's
know?
What I'm saying. So four Captain Creepy Faces and one Shadow Vag demon because he, like you can't guard that shit. Like what are you gonna do? Swipe right through it? You foul him every time. Oh, like man. You try to get a charging thing put against you, like he's standing still with his feet flat, and he just like hovers over the top of you and puts the ball in the hoop.
Oops! Knife through your heart. Sorry.
Yeah, but how well, about listeners? Give us your starting five.
Yeah, and feel free to throw in your alternates.
That was awesome.
In Sweden, they have alternates. Yeah, it's time to read some of your emails. And, you know, we haven't done this in the show before yet because we thought, well, there's just so much television show to talk about. Why not read your emails later? So some of these are backdated a little bit, but they're all interesting. And we're also going to grab a bunch of the stuff you guys have been saying in the forums this week.
I'm going to read the one from Black Eyed Lily because I'm thinking about Lily for some reason. She says, love your podcast. I'm another longtime follower from MuggleCast. Just finished listening to your season 2 finale podcast and had a couple of moments or comments. In regards to the horse poo, I'll say poo. She did not
poo.
That is straight from the books. In the Sansa POV chapter in Clash of Kings that follows the Blackwater Bay battle, she is watching on the ceremony in the throne room. Tywin Lannister rides his horse in, and it poops right in front of the throne. I think that
Google
been
Docs
funnier.
Said poops is not a real word, by the way, just so you guys know.
Yeah, Google Docs is currently saying that's misspelled.
Yeah.
It's not. At least it's not the grammar, the green mark. I would really worry about it there.
Yeah.
But anyway, she says, "Black." This is still from Black Eyed Lily. It would have been funnier, but probably harder to shoot. Also, Tywin is not the first to ride his horse into the throne room. When Ned came into King's Landing to claim the city on Robert's behalf, he rode into the throne room to find Jaime sitting on the throne. Forgot about that. Lastly, I do think that Dany had a good reason to shut her handmaiden up in the vault. Seems that she must have played a big role in helping Zaro and the Warlock steal her dragons and slaughter her people. Looking back, I think Eri was suspicious of her, and that's why there was all that tension between them in the earlier episode where Eri was showing Dany the clothes she had repaired. At the time, Eri's attitude towards Doria didn't make sense. As one of the major book changes, we have to kind of puzzle this one out for ourselves.
I feel enlightened after that.
I do too. I'm going to look back at that scene because I didn't know why those little... Well, those girls didn't get along because I thought they were just being catty girls, right?
Well, I just thought that one was mad because the other knew more than the other.
This next email comes from Skylar, and she says, I was listening to the 11th episode of Game of Bones when I heard you quote the line of the faceless man. Don't know how to spell his name. I think she's referring to Jack and Hygar, where he says, to be a dancing master is a special thing. But to be a faceless man, that is something else entirely. I know you love the Tolkien references, and it made me think of the Fellowship of the Ring, when Aragorn says to Frodo, I can avoid being seen if I wish, but to disappear entirely, that is a rare
gift. That's a rare gift.
Love the show. I'm about to finish reading the first book, so try and keep a lid on the spoilers for a bit longer.
Pleasantly pleasant.
Somebody.
Yeah, Micah.
Yeah, Micah.
So, TJ... writes, hi guys and girl. And girl, that's me. Wanted to let you know that I'm loving the podcast and I have a quick little bit of wordplay for you. Oh, guys, get ready to laugh. Uh-oh. What is another way of describing a horde of White Walkers? A bunch of Snow Whites. If you don't laugh at the pun, I hope you at least laughed at the ridiculousness of it. Lastly, Team Tyrion, woo. People will get it. People will laugh at home.
They'll laugh. I Thank you, TJ. Clever. That was very eloquently put. Thank you, Sarah. I have an email here from Stacy, and I wouldn't allow Micah to read it earlier. Here it goes. Hi, I just listened to the first podcast for Game of Thrones. I was so excited to hear you were going to have one. I fell in love with the show right away when I found it channel surfing. I was a little scared to read the books because I thought they'd be hard to read, but when your encouragement on MuggleCast, I gave the book a try. Wow, I'm so glad I did. Now I'm starting Storm of Swords, and I have a hard time putting it down. Michael, I agree with what you said regarding who will end up on the throne at the end. And this is a theory, guys. And so I don't want to get into a long theory discussion, and we eventually will. But this is sort of a popular theory on the internets right now. But she thinks that it will be Jon Snow at the throne at the end. She thinks that Jon's mother is Lyanna Stark, and that maybe Rhaegar is the father. Maybe. And then she goes on to talk about more of her ideas about that theory, and she says, I live in a small town in Wisconsin, and no one who I know likes to read and discuss books. My husband makes fun of me and does not understand this. Finding MuggleCast a year ago was a godsend. I love the chapter by chapter. I really enjoy listening to your insight and opinions. Now with the Game of Thrones podcast, I am so looking forward to discussing of this more adult story. My birthday is tomorrow, and the perfect gift would be a response from you. Thank you for your podcast. They make me feel not so alone in the world. Sincerely, Stacy, a 35-year-old working mother. Well, Stacy,
happy birthday, like a few handfuls of weeks ago.
Yeah, I hope it was happy and that you had plenty of cake. Cheat codes, I have a cake waiting for me after we get done recording this episode. That's a true story. It's an entire cake for no occasion. chocolate with peanut butter white chocolate frosting, because I finished it because a music video came out this week, so I'm just in celebration mode.
Why are you here recording with us eating
that cake right now? So Stacy, thanks so much for cementing Micah's real name. He tries to be like one of the characters from Majora's Mask, which is Zora, the name of Micah, who is really good at playing the Zora guitar, and he was a very important character in that video game if you guys and he grew an affinity for that. I do too. That game is so good. He grew an affinity for that character, that Zora. He thinks that he looks like the Zora a lot. Very athletic and is very good in amphibious situations. So
don't they play at like the bar? What's the name of that bar?
It's the Milk Bar. Is what it is.
Yeah,
it's
the Milk Bar.
Milk Bar in East Clocktown, where they sell the very special drink Chateau Romani. So you know, I'm glad that we were able to get that clarity out in the future of the show.
With your cake.
Mm-hmm.
On the theory, not that, again, we're going to go into it now, but yeah, that is definitely a very popular fan theory that I personally subscribe to as well.
This is very, I'm reading through the comments on our podcast post, which you linked to, Zach, and just there's this one comment from The Left Lane. I'm going to read it here real quick. It says, you guys mentioned in the episode, I believe this is the episode that we talked about the finale, that Varys and Tyrion talk about Dany being in Carth. I'm really glad that made it into the show. The fact that Varys even knows that at this point is very important later on, and I'm glad they chose to show it. If anyone hasn't read through Book 3, keep that in mind. Remember who Varys' informant was in Season 1. This is all super cryptic, because I'm like, wait, who was his informant in Season 1? And, ooh, this is important, and ah.
The forums have been abuzz with a lot of you early registrars in your... Yeah. Interesting names. I do have to give an honorable mention to active Twitter listener Larry the Wombat, who has changed his forum name to a more appropriate Larry the Direwolf. So if you guys can keep up with that, it's gameofthrones.com/forum, and we'll be sourcing a lot more of those as the weeks draw on, and as you guys post more in there as we grow toward the book discussion and some of the more special stuff that we have hidden.
If you guys want to, if you want to go to hyperbull.com, then it has, I don't know, you stop the beat, so I can't keep going.
But you said you wanted to do awesome. Hyperbull, so I'll just give you the music.
He will do a beat for you if you want to do that.
I don't know what rhymes with .com, but it's great. So please
the prom.
Go to the prom.
Hot mom.
Oh, yeah.
Please send your Hypeable jingles to hypeable@gameofbones.com.
If you want to find us on, if you want to find us on Facebook, we're on Facebook at facebook.com/gameofbones. Very fun to interact with all of you socially, and which is why we also have a Twitter where you can stay up to date on all of the latest stuff of us and our hosts by following us at twitter.com/gameofbones.
And of course, we appreciate your rating and reviewing us on iTunes. We currently have 97 ratings, and it's a perfect 5 stars. I have no idea how this could have possibly happened.
It's cheat codes, guys. Cheat codes. I used the Game Genie on iTunes.
We
it's
have
working.
All the cheat codes.
And obviously, we like to keep it at that 5-star level. If for any reason you decide to go on and not give us a 5-star review, we may have to send Eric after you in a fishnet stocking shirt.
Oh, God,
whoa,
please.
Whoa.
Please rate with 5 stars.
That because I'll be pretty on demand. I mean, people be giving us 1 star.
You and all that
is
holy.
Serious business, you guys.
We're looking forward to next week because that is the time we get to read the books and talk about them with you guys.
I'm Eric Skull.
I'm Selena Wilkin.
I'm Michael Tannenbaum.
And I'm Zacharias Louie.
That's not my name.
Ooh,
goodbye.
Zacharias.